Now, back to the Eric Stewart Show on WMAL.
I love to hear the voice of Mr. Beacon himself, Stuart Rosenthal. Stuart, how are you?
What does a beacon sound like? Hi, Eric.
Well, you know, it's this
beak,
unique...
Beak, 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 beak.
All right, so what do you got for us?
Okay, we'll talk about an interesting money story, I think. It was eye-opening to me. ETFs.
Right.
You're familiar with, of course, these exchange-traded funds, which have been around for a number of years now. And people are often confused. I'm often confused. Well, how do they differ from mutual funds? What is the point? Well, of course, they are the same in the sense that they all hold common stocks or bonds. And you get a wide variety of them, either an index of the market or a group of funds of group of stocks of a particular kind, like healthcare or other industries or emerging markets or whatever. But the difference is that exchange-traded funds are exchanged, as I say, on the market. You could buy and sell any time during the day that the market's open.
Right.
And they're constantly changing in price.
Right.
Whereas with a mutual fund, as I understand it, it's just a once-a-day price is set, and that's what it is.
Yes.
So ETFs have really been gaining in popularity. There are thousands of them now.
Mm-hmm.
Something interesting to keep in mind is that each of them has different pros and cons depending on what your needs are.
Mm-hmm.
So in general, they both differ from a managed account, of course, in the sense that when you have management of your stock portfolio, you usually pay a relatively high fee, 1% or more, sometimes 2 or even 3% of the value each year to the person who's managing it.
Right.
And a lot of writers, including ours, have often argued that it's very hard for a managed account to consistently beat the index, because these index funds have such low annual fees. For example, two of the largest Vanguard index funds, Total Stock Market Index and Total Stock Market ETF, one's a mutual fund, one's an ETF, have expense ratios of 0.05%, 0.05%.
Okay.
That's a very small amount compared to 1% or 2%.
You know,
the amount that you have to earn on those stocks is much lower in order to still come out even or ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So the other things to keep in mind, though, that he brings up in the article that I was not as familiar with is that you pay a brokerage fee for each time you buy or sell a stock. With an ETF, apparently, generally, you do, whereas with a mutual fund, you might not.
Hmm.
And there's also always a bid and ask spread on every transaction with ETFs because they're being traded on the stock market on an ongoing basis, whereas that doesn't apply apparently in the same way to mutual funds. So these were new things to me. So, and of course, with mutual funds, there can be a sales commission or a load, which is an upfront extra cost, which you want to be aware of before you sort of say, oh, well, this is a mutual fund. It's going to be cheaper. Not always.
Right.
It depends. And it depends on how long you hold it and all other kinds of things. So it's a fairly complex set of issues, but they're addressed in this article, and I thought it was very enlightening.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm curious, when I hear all of the potential situations, you ultimately just have to make a decision on who you trust and who that person is going to be. And sometimes that's worth more money than just savings. But if you're calculating all these things, it's good. Read the Beacon newspaper to become more aware of what you should look out for. Okay?
Right.
The Beacon newspaper, free in over 1,500 locations around the D.C. area. If you'd like to, give them a call at 301-949-9766. 9766.
We can tell you where there's a free distribution site near where you live.
Wonderful.
And, of course, there are also gift subscriptions you can give. They make nice gifts for people.
Yes,
very
absolutely.
Very inexpensive.
Wonderful. Well, anything else on that? Or?
Well, we have an article about patient advocacy and what patient advocates do and how you choose one. But we don't really have time to go into it, I guess. But I'll just mention that that's a very useful thing because these advocates can also save you lots of money or help you find medical specialists at a reasonable cost or deal with other kinds of hospital bill issues or whatever.
Right.
That's what they're for.
All right. Get more information again at the Beacon Newspapers. TheBeaconNewspapers.com is the website. Thanks, Stuart.
Thank you, Eric.
Years ago tomorrow, on a reedy stretch of riverbank in southern England, the most important bargain in the history of the human race was struck, or at least one of the most important bargains. Now, I realize that's a big claim, but in this case, only superlatives will do. As Lord Denning, who is the most celebrated modern British jurist, put it, Magna Carta was the greatest constitutional document of all time, the foundation of the freedom of the individual against the arbitrary authority of the despot. It was at Runnymede on June 15th of 1215, 800 years ago tomorrow that the idea of the law standing above the government first took contractual form. You see, King John accepted that he would no longer get to make the rules up as he went along. From that acceptance flowed, ultimately, all the rights and freedoms that we now take for granted. Uncensored newspapers, security of property, equality before the law, habeas corpus, regular elections, sanctity of contract, jury trials. Magna Carta is Latin for Great Charter. It was so named not because the men who drafted it foresaw its epic power, but because it was long. Yet almost immediately, the document began to take on a political significance that justified the adjective in every sense. The bishops and barons who had brought King John to the negotiating table understood that rights required an enforcement mechanism. The potency of a charter is not in its parchment, but in the authority to its interpretation. The Constitution of the USSR, to pluck an example more or less at random, promised all sorts of entitlements: free speech, free worship, free association. But as Soviet citizens learned, paper rights are worthless in the absence of mechanisms to hold rulers to account. Magna Carta instituted a form of conciliar rule that was to develop directly into the parliament that meets at Westminster today. As the great Victorian historian William Stubbs put it, the whole constitutional history of England is little more than a commentary on the Magna Carta. And not just England. Indeed, not even England in particular, Magna Carta has always been a bigger deal in the U.S. The meadow where the abominable King John put his royal seal to the parchment lies in the county of Surrey. It went unmarked until 1957, when a memorial stone was finally raised there and by the American Bar Association. See, only now, for this anniversary, is a British monument being erected at the place where freedom was born. After some frantic fundraising by a handful of local councillors, a large bronze statue of Queen Elizabeth II will gaze out across the slow green waters of the Thames, marking 800 years of the Crown's acceptance of the rule of law. 800 years is a long wait. The British, by any measure, have been slow to recognize what they have. But Americans, by contrast, have always been keenly aware of the document, referring to it respectfully as the Magna Carta. Why? Largely because of who the first Americans were. You see, the Magna Carta was reissued several times throughout the 14th and 15th centuries, and as successive parliaments asserted their prerogatives, it receded from public consciousness under the Tudors, whose dynasty ended with the death of Elizabeth I in 1603. In the early 17th century, members of Parliament revived Magna Carta as a weapon in their quarrels with the autocratic Stuart monarchs. Opposition to the crown was led by the brilliant lawyer Edward Coke, who drafted the first Virginia Charter in 1606, and Coke's argument was that the king was sidelining Parliament and so unbalancing the ancient constitution of which Magna Carta was the supreme expression. The early settlers arrived while these rows were at their height and carried the mania of the Magna Carta to their new homes. As early as 1637, Maryland sought permission to incorporate Magna Carta into its basic law, and the first edition of the Great Charter was published on American soil in 1687 by William Penn, who explained that it was what made Englishmen unique. In France and in other nations, the mere will of the prince is law. But not so here in America. More of the Magna Carta to come right after this break.